This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. We've got lots to get to. Brian Lawton's going to join us in a couple of minutes. He, of course, from NHL Tonight. And boy, the resume is extensive with Brian. He was the first overall pick of the 1983 entry draft by the Minnesota North Stars, an American-born player, became an agent after his career was over, became an executive with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and now is working in the media. So we'll break down the draft with him. But while we got a couple of moments, I wanted to just recap last night's award ceremony, and we'll go over the awards in a second. But really, the highlight of it all was Anderson Whitehead, and he, of course, was presented with the award for, you know, the best viral video, if you will, during the course of the season. And, of course, if you don't remember that moment, his mom had tried to arrange for her son, Anderson Whitehead, to meet his idol, Carey Price, goaltender of the Montreal Canadiens, and she was dying of cancer, and she did pass away, unfortunately. But at practice during the course of the season, Anderson had a chance to meet Carey Price, and of course that video went viral. And then on receiving the award last night in Vegas, they made it seem like Carey Price could not be there, so he was on video screen, but then said, wait a minute, came out from behind the curtain, and just the emotion and the tears were just phenomenal, and it just really shows you how great hockey players are and how connected they are with their fan base. And I thought that it was a great award. I thought it was a great emotional ceremony, and that, to me, was the lasting memory and the lasting moment of last night. Award ceremonies are very awkward because, you know, EJ mentioned it earlier the week on the podcast that everybody wants the one trophy, all right? All these trophies, all these awards that were passed out last night are great, but every single one of those individuals that won an award would trade it for that Stanley Cup the St. Louis Blues won. And it's a regular season award, which also seems awkward because we just went through 2+ months of the playoffs and you kind of forget about the regular season. So the Hart Trophy goes to Nikita Kucherov, and well deserved. He had a phenomenal season, by far the best offensive player of anybody in the National Hockey League, but he's on the Tampa Bay Lightning, who got swept in the first round of the playoffs and had such a disappointing season. So I'm sure he's very proud to win the Hart Trophy for the league MVP, but it's certainly going to be in a year that the Lightning and their fans want to forget because they were swept out of the first round. And, you know, the same goes for Vasilevsky, who won the Vezina Trophy. Again, well-deserved, but I'm sure he would trade that in a second for the opportunity to be able to big home the big prize. And that was kind of the awkwardness of the ceremony because Kucherov also won the Ted Lindsay Award. John Cooper was up for the Jack Adams Trophy for Coach of the Year that eventually went to Barry Trotz of the New York Islanders. Well-deserved there. But the vibe of the disappointment of the Lightning being celebrated for their great regular season only to fail in the first round of the playoffs. But there were still some well-deserved awards. Wayne Simmonds won the Mark Messier NHL Leadership Award. Ryan O'Reilly, what a year for him. The Selke Trophy, the Bill Masterson Trophy went to Robin Lehner, which was a slam dunk for sure. And then during the course of his speech, another emotional moment when he talked about, I may be mentally ill, but I'm not mentally weak. And all of the trials and tribulations that he went through, to not only overcome that, but to be on a team that went to the playoffs, make it to the second round, be a major responsibility for that, I thought was a cool moment. The Norris goes to Mark Giordano, and it could have went to any of the three candidates for that as well, but he had this breakout season late in his career taking home that award. Jason Zucker for the Clancy Trophy, the General Manager of the Year, Don Sweeney, who very quietly built a juggernaut in Boston, and the complete transformation the Bruins went from a methodic, punishing, physical, slow team to a speed team that came within a whisker of winning the Stanley Cup. And Elias Pettersson wins the Calder Trophy in a year where there are a lot of good rookies, and also kind of harkens back as we get ready for the draft here that we're so focused on Hughes and Kako, one and two, that'll be drafted most likely. One of those two will be the first overall pick, but it looks like both will be gone by the time we get to pick number three. That it's really about beyond the draft, right? That we talk so much about that draft in which Hischier and Patrick went one and two, but the Heskinens and, of course, the Pettersons that went later on maybe had more of an impact, at least in the immediate future, than those guys did. Ultimately, we'll see. The draft, to me, is fascinating because you have different stages of it, right? There's going to be the feeling on Saturday, all right, who won the first round of the draft, and then you'll have the first year where a lot of those players will get a chance to play, and then who won or lost then. And then you fast forward 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, ultimately who won the draft. It's going to not be determined in the first couple of weeks, although that's what will be graded by a lot of the quote-unquote experts. But ultimately, how they all perform during the course of their careers will ultimately determine who did the right thing. And I'm a big believer in free agency is a way to build. Trades are a way to build. But if you want to become a dynasty team, if you want to become a perennial winner, the best way to do that is with drafting. The best teams that draft the best are the ones that end up ultimately becoming great. You look at Chicago. Why did Chicago win three Stanley Cups in a short period of time? Because of Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, players that they drafted. You know, the Rangers were able to turn things around after many years of spending money unwisely. They finally find a gem in Henrik Lundqvist, and they build themselves a team that's a perennial playoff team for over a decade. And the Devils, when they built their dynasties with Brodeur and Scott Niedermayer, yes, they had shrewd moves by bringing in Scott Stevens, but to be able to draft the Maddens, the Niedermayers, the Eliashes, that's what led them to win their three Stanley Cups in a nine-year span. And that's ultimately what ends up getting it done. All right, now let's shift our attention to the draft coming up from Vancouver on Friday. And, of course, the NHL Network is going to be all over it. You're going to check out NHL Tonight's 2019 NHL Draft Preview, which will be coming up on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, followed by the NHL Network's exclusive coverage of rounds 2 through 7 for the entry draft on Saturday, beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, NBC Sportsnet will have the first round on Friday. But our next guest has done it all in the NHL. Drafted first overall in 83. American-born player, actually born in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and then goes on to the National Hockey League career for 10 years, retires, becomes an agent, then becomes an executive of the Tampa Bay Lightning, now working in the media. There isn't anything that Brian Lawton hasn't done, including now finally a guest on Game Misconduct. Brian, it's Don LaGreca. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure to be here. Don, how are you?
All right. Is there anything you haven't done? Maybe just coach. Why not? Just to round it all out.
I would love to coach, to be honest with you, but it never happened. I coached children and enjoyed it immensely.
Right.
I'd love to do it for men, though. I have to be honest.
All right, let's start. You're just in a unique perspective, right? You went first overall. You went through this process that right now, you know, Hughes is probably going through, and you're in the unique position of being an American drafted in the first round, right out of high school, which is the first time that ever happened. And, you know, what we've seen Americans be drafted first overall. We saw it with Madonna. We saw it with Matthews. But you coming out of high school, you know, that was a first. And now we're going to see Hughes, an American player, likely going first overall. So what responsibility did you feel, Brian, not just being the first overall pick, but being a unique situation of being an American first round pick?
You know, I didn't think about it much, Don, when I was, you know, essentially I was 17 years old when I was drafted. Probably never really hit me in terms of being the first American-born player to ever be selected first until I got to training camp and I could kind of figure out that it meant something to, you know, the team was predominantly Canadian at that time. So it was different. And that was probably the first time I ever really gave it any thought. You don't think about where you're from. You're just a hockey player. But it became evident to me then that, it was different. It was something unique. And I was proud to be selected first, but overall didn't have a lot of bearing on, you know, the way I approached being a player and my teammates.
So we've got the draft coming up on Friday, and it just seems the sense it's Kako or Hughes going first overall. Now, for the longest time, it was Hughes. Hughes was the projected number one. Kako comes out of the world. People are starting to believe he's built some momentum. Do you believe any thinking has changed, or is Hughes still right now the number one prospect going into this draft?
I definitely think that the perspective has changed. I think it's much tighter than we probably would have imagined 3 months ago, and that was based off of the incredible world championship that Kaapo Kakko had. He was afforded an opportunity on the team to play a much bigger role than Jack Hughes was, quite frankly. In a strange twist, having as many quality American players as we had in the World Championships certainly took away some of the opportunity that a guy like Jack Hughes might have normally gotten in that tournament. Kakko, on the other hand, you know, two NHL players on their entire team. They had an incredible tournament, win the tournament. He scores 5 goals in the first 2 games. Everything went right for him, and I think that opens a lot of eyes that yes, this Jack Hughes is really good, but so is this Kaapo Kakko. And as a matter of fact, kind of reminds us a little bit of Mikko Rantanen in Colorado.
Well, that would be a pretty good one to have, right, for sure. Now, it also comes down to what fits best for the given team. So you got the Devils with the first overall pick, Rangers with the second overall pick. Rather than go into who's best, like who best fits where, you're the Devils, who do you think you should take, and would the Rangers be happy with whoever ends up being second?
I think the Rangers are over the moon right now in terms of their selection that they'll make at number two. I think that either way, Jeff Gordon, it's out of his control, but he knows he's going to get a really good player, and that's what I'm talking about. The perspective has changed. You know, when Connor McDavid went and Jack Eichel was second, you know, Jack Eichel was a great player, but there was still just a little bit of trepidation that, man, why couldn't we have picked first? I don't think that's the case this year. I think that Kakko is right there with Jack Hughes, mm-hmm. and I think the Rangers are ecstatic. My biggest thing as we look at these kids, Don, is really how you treat them when they come into the league. Because right now, I think everybody could pump the brakes a little bit, and it would be in the best interest of the players.
Are you a believer that center's more important than winger when you're making the selection?
I am. I clearly am. I think they're able to impact the game 90% of the time at a bigger level than a winger. Yes, there's exceptions. Patrick Kane, Alex Ovechkin, Nikita Kucherov. But ultimately, I think a center, if we had two equal players, I would select a center first over a winger if they were absolutely dead equal in value.
This doesn't get brought up a lot. I don't think it's necessarily a big deal, Brian, but Kakko's got, he's a type 1 diabetic, celiac disease. Again, not huge problems, especially in this day and age of modern medicine, but as an executive, if you're making a selection, is his health any concern to you?
From the people I've talked to that are in the possibility of selecting him, I am told there's absolutely no issues. As a general manager, you are paid to figure that stuff out. You got to do your due diligence. You have opportunity to go in there and get a really good handle on that stuff. I'm told there's no concerns whatsoever. It's not a negative from a medical standpoint. Now, is it potentially just one little nick in terms of hurting a player's overall value? That's mm-hmm. up to the general manager to decide that. But I don't think it would be a concern. And I think the Rangers, if they end up selecting Kakko, that they'll be really, really pleased.
All right, now we look at Chicago sitting there at three. A lot of people believe that Alex Turcotte could be the selection there. Maybe they go defense as well. I mean, do you have any kind of sense of what happens beyond one and two in this draft on Friday?
Well, I think the draft really starts at number three, personally.
Yeah.
You know, not that these guys aren't great players, they are, but it seems like a fait accompli at this stage that Hughes and Kakko will go 1-2 in some order. So what's going to happen from there? Because this draft has the potential to go a number of different ways. Certainly, there's no doubt that Alex Turcotte, Bowen Byram, and Kirby Dotch are kind of that next group of three, and it could go anywhere from there. I've called the Chicago Blackhawks 100 times. And I have absolutely no idea who they're going to select. They're playing it very close to the vest, as they should. But that's where things really get interesting for me. I like Byram, personally. It's no knock on either of the other two players. I think they're both excellent. And they're both going to be big-time players. But, boy, there's no box that Byram doesn't check for me that suggests he won't be a number one defenseman. I have a little bit of history in this. Obviously, we selected Victor Hedman
sure.
Way back when in 09. So I can't say enough how valuable it is if you can come up with a guy that can give you 24, 25 minutes a night. We saw it in the playoffs. Incredibly valuable.
And, right, there's other defensemen in this draft, but it looks like clearly Byram's the best, right?
To me right now, he is. I wouldn't, you know, that's no slight against a guy like Philip Broberg. who potentially could be the next D to go, and there's others. But he seems to be a notch ahead the way that Kako and Hughes are a notch ahead of the other forwards.
Now, you drafted, as you said, this goes back a few years ago. You were with the Lightning there in the mid-2000s, and you know, maybe how much have things changed in the last decade? There's a speed game now. The rules have changed just a bit. Is your thinking of size and speed different now than it might have been when you were with Tampa?
I think everybody has had to reevaluate that, Don, to be honest with you, after these playoffs. You know, Tampa had an incredible team, fast, skilled, didn't go very well in the playoffs. That caused people to pause. Heavy was back in. When you see St. Louis and Boston, the way they play, and yet the game has changed significantly. That's where it was 10 years ago, where it kind of ended up this year. Are people going to re-gravitate towards that, or are they going to keep going on, you know, smaller players? Is Caulfield, a guy that's going to get selected in the top 7-8 players? Possibly. I think that one comes down to whoever the scout is for that team that makes the pick, pounding on the table and saying, this guy's going to score 40. Not 20, but 40, because Cole Caulfield will score 20 goals in the NHL. But who's going to be the director of scouting that stands up and says, I think he's going to score 40? That's the team that will select him, in my opinion.
All right, what about goalie?
You know, the goalie deal is interesting. You have to be in a unique position, in my opinion, as a general manager, to select a goalie, let's say as high as 12th or 15th. Certainly this year, there's just a lot of really good players that are going to be available in that range. When you look at the history of goalies, there's very few that you select. If you really go back and look at every goalie that's been selected in, say, the first three rounds, the majority of the players are being selected for another team. That's when they're going to really hit it. They won't be playing for your team. You're talking 5, 6, potentially 7 years down the line. So is somebody in a draft like this going to step up and get Spencer Knight, who's a top-rated goaltender? I believe they will, but I don't see it happening before 14.
Okay.
I really don't.
Yeah, Tom on Twitter asked the question, can Spencer Knight be a top 15 type of pick because of the fact that he's might be the biggest goaltender in this draft? Would there be any exceptions to see him maybe go before 15?
I think any of the teams that have multiple picks potentially could afford to, you know, it has to be a general manager, has a lot of clout, has a lot of time on his side, and he can afford to wait for that pick. Otherwise, I don't see a team doing it. I don't see the Minnesota Wild, you know, who's picking, I believe, 12. I don't see them taking a goaltender. I could make a case that Devin Dubnyk's getting older.
Yeah.
They've got a guy in the minors, a Finnish player that I like a lot. But I wouldn't see it happening. I think that would be a hard pick for a guy like Paul Fenton.
You know what the problem is, Brian, when it comes to goaltending? Like every other position, we're seeing the youth movement, right? We're seeing 19, 20-year-olds getting a chance to play at the forward position, maybe a little bit older on defense, but certainly in their early 20s. Goaltender seems to be the position where you can kind of wait on them a little bit longer, that they can stay, they can play past the age of 34, 35 in a lot of cases. So if you want bang for your buck immediately and you have a high draft pick, then maybe goaltender is not the direction to go into.
I think that's the way most general managers are thinking. You know, they're really very few of these higher guys. Yes, we have Vasilevskiy. Yes, we have Carey Price. Yes, it's happened many, many times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's just not in vogue.
Yeah, for sure, because we're talking about, it used to be 5-year plans, 3-year plans. Now it's like a 1-year plan. So if I'm going to draft a guy that might not mature for another 3-4 years, and I want to try to win now, and a lot of these owners putting pressure on the general managers to go out and get somebody that can have an impact right away. We're talking to Brian Lawton, former executive, former first overall pick, now working for the NHL Network. And the NHL will have NHL Tonight, 2019 NFL Draft Preview coming up Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And they will also have rounds 2 through 7 beginning Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time exclusively on the NHL Network. Give us some sleepers, Brian, guys that might go later on in the first round that might have an impact, that might surprise some people.
There's a player in Minnesota, Jackson Lacombe. Now, I've happened to have known him for a long time. I think he's a guy that got a little bit of a history like Jake Gardner. You know, he used to be a forward at his younger ages, converted to a defenseman, beautiful skater. I think he's got a chance to jump up into the first round. That would be a surprise. Most people generally have him rated in the mid to late second round, but he's certainly one. Craig Johnson's son, who some people might remember, when Craig was a player, his son, Ryan Johnson, another really smooth skating center that kind of, defenseman that popped in terms of growth this year. The guy that was 5'7" at the start of the year and finished the season at 6 feet. So I feel like there may be just some teams are behind on the evaluations there. He's the guy that could pop up. And there's really many others, to be honest with you, but those are a couple names to watch for.
Yeah, because you look at the draft a couple of years ago, so much focus was on Heischer and Patrick, and then you see a Pettersson go a little bit later on, and he ends up winning the Calder Trophy, right? He ends up being, you know, the surprise pick. So that's why you got to pay attention to what happens deeper in the first round. Bobby tweets, any predictions on surprise trades for tomorrow evening? Any thoughts there?
They will be surprises. So much surprises that we can't even fathom what they are right now. I do think that the final number for the salary cap is stuffing things up just a little bit. You know, and unfortunately, I don't believe that'll be out until Saturday. So maybe some of these things will wait till Saturday. But I'd be shocked if we don't see a lot of teams trying to completely rejigger themselves. The pressure has been ramped up on general managers. People are looking at St. Louis and saying, my goodness, they were dead last in January. They won the Stanley Cup. What's going on here? What's going on is that the league is closer than ever. The salary cap, as it slows down in terms of growth on a yearly basis, it just pulls everybody that much closer. And it looks like the cap is going to slow down significantly this year, maybe even next year. That's going to make it even tighter. That ramps up expectations by owners, and it funnels down to the general managers to be just a little bit more bold than maybe we've seen in the past, to absorb just a little bit more risk than some guys have been willing to.
Brian, what do you do if you're the Devils? I mean, you hear rumors that Taylor Hall's not going to re-sign, not sign before he becomes a free agent. He's going to want to test free agency. So are you shopping him tomorrow and this weekend, or are you just going to kind of ride it out and see what happens?
I think you absolutely 100% in order to be competent in your job, have to explore every avenue for your club. If a guy makes it clear that he's not going to sign and you're not doing that, then you're really not doing your job. So now you may not talk about it publicly,
right?
Because it's a tough place for Ray Shero to be in. But the fact of the matter is he represents the New Jersey Devils and he's got to do what's best for them. And it is not best for them if Taylor Hall does not re-sign and goes somewhere else, and he didn't at least know what every option was for the organization. So, to me, that's a no-brainer, 100%. You're doing it. Do I think he's going to get traded in the next couple of days? No, but if somebody makes an offer that knocks his socks off, I actually think he would.
Now, the similar situation with the Rangers and Chris Kreider, right? He's got another year left on his deal as well. I think he wants to stay, but the question would be, do the Rangers want him to stay? Does he fit into what they're rebuilding towards?
I think if he didn't, you know, a few months ago, 100% for certain, he probably does more now. You know, adding Jacob Trouba, moving up so significantly in the lottery, you know, the fortunes have taken a pretty positive turn for the Rangers all of a sudden. Things that were, you know, somewhat out of their control. They did a really nice job in bringing in a guy like Trouba for not that expensive of a cost. That surprised a lot of people. And then, you know, quite frankly, there's a lot of discussion teams that are certainly Chicago that had a chance to move up so significantly in the lottery or in the draft doesn't feel that great to everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's going to change, but you know that's just the reality of it. The Rangers got some really nice breaks. That was one of them out of their control. All of a sudden, you feel like what was feeling like it might be a long rebuild has been accelerated significantly.
Yeah, there's no question. As you said, the St. Louis Blues doing what they did probably have everybody thinking maybe we'll move into the fast lane. We're going 55 in the middle lane. Maybe we'll pop it in the fifth gear and go a little bit quicker with our rebuild. Brian, we'll be watching you on the NHL Network. NHL Tonight, 2019 NHL Draft Preview coming up tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll be Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. And then the NHL Network will have exclusive coverage of rounds 2 through 7 beginning Saturday at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Brian, first time I had a chance to talk to you. Thanks so much and looking forward to talking to you again down the road.
Oh, thanks, Don. My pleasure.
All right, that's Brian Lawton. As I said, he's done everything but coach in, on the NHL level. He talked about coaching, you know, his kids. So, you know, a few little possibilities down the road in the first round, some good players. Looks like there's one big defenseman, one big goaltender, and then the rest are really heavy forwards, really heavy centers. But it sounds like Kako's kind of gone up. He started at, like, fourth last year as a projected pick and then moved up to 2, and now some people flirting with him at 1 because of the way he played at the Worlds, but I still think it's going to go Hughes to the Devils, it's going to go Kako to the Rangers, and then it's kind of just open season from there where everybody's going to go and what kind of fits, and I do think it's going to be very, very active via trades over the weekend. But Brian makes a good point. We're not going to know the exact cap number until Saturday. It's going to be somewhere in the $81 million range, so I think there'll be a rough estimate, but for teams that are really up against the cap, they might have to wait until Saturday to see exactly what that cap number is going to be. So maybe Friday we'll be exclusively just looking at the first round and then over the weekend paying more attention to the possible trades that can happen rather than what happens between rounds 2 and 7. Wanted to close it out with your tweets. Ari Kaufman says, where does Corey Perry rank among the free agents? He's just below Panarin and Duchesne because of his accomplishments, or does his age drive his value down? Thanks and love the podcast. Of course, Corey Perry bought out by the Anaheim Ducks. Perry's been injury prone, older, so he's certainly not on the level of Panarin and Duchesne, but he is someone that I think in the right system, that can use that kind of a bigger scoring forward. But he definitely ranks a couple of tiers down from the big-time free agents. But he's got a lot of wear and tear. As I said, the Ducks have played a lot of games over the years. Him and Getzlaf, a major part of what the Ducks did. But Perry's been banged up a little bit, so I think some teams will be cautious. He will play in this league. There's a place for him for sure. I'm just not going to put him on the same level as the other potential free agents. Robert says, I know playoffs aren't supposed to count, but if Jack Adams' voting was held last week, do you think Berube would have won? Of course, he won the Stanley Cup, and a major reason along with Bennington is the reason why the St. Louis Blues were able to turn it around. I might have mentioned it before on the podcast, I do have a vote as a broadcaster, and our votes had to be in before the regular season came to an end. So nothing that happened in the postseason influenced it. Berube was a candidate along with Cooper and Barry Trotz. I thought Cooper would get more of a look. But what ends up happening is when you've got a great team, you don't really focus on the coaching. Mike Babcock could have won a bunch of Jack Adams trophies when he was in Detroit, but the feeling was he had the talent. He's supposed to be good. Tampa was supposed to be good. St. Louis wasn't supposed to be when you consider where they were in the middle of the season. And certainly the Islanders were not a playoff team the year before. They lost their best player. And then Barry Trotz comes in and they make it to the second round of the playoffs and flirted with winning the division. So I thought clearly, and that was my vote, Barry Trotz for the Jack Adams Trophy. But certainly there would have been major influence to him winning the award had the postseason counted. Sean says, do you think the Rangers have any plans on trading back into the latter part of the first round? I don't think they're going to trade. I think they're very happy where they are. They traded the 20th overall pick to get Trouba. I think they're very content staying at 2, getting either Hughes or Kako. I think they realize that Kako's most likely the player that's going to be there. The fans want him. I think the Rangers are looking for a finisher for sure. I'm more concerned from a Ranger standpoint, as we talked about with Brian, in, what trades are going to come? Could Kevin Shattenkirk be bought out? Will Chris Kreider be dealt away? I mean, there's still a lot going on here, and JD's going to have a major influence. I think the Rangers and the Devils are not just major players because they have the first and second overall picks. They're major players because of the trades that they can make. So I think there's a lot of excitement surrounding this draft, both with the players and the quality. The idea that you see a lot of these players that are drafted make immediate impacts, maybe not to the level of the NFL, but close. And certainly the trades that can happen make it fun for everybody, even teams that don't have a pick. I think it's going to be very active. The rumors that I heard, and Brian confirmed them, general managers are really chatting. I think this is going to be a busy weekend. Players are going to be packing their bags and changing teams for sure. All right, we were going to do something on Friday, but Brian became available, so we're going to leave it be for this podcast until Monday, and then we'll check in with EJ Raddick. He was in Vancouver, and we'll get everything going as far as how it went in the draft, analyzing all the trades, and set you up for July 1st, which will be another stage of some major things happening in the NHL when free agency kicks off on July 1st. So have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you again on Monday. This was the Thursday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.